Hi there, it's Jillian, and I want to tell you about Jillian on Love Plus, your way to get even more Jillian on Love each week by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Patreon. You can access exclusive bonus episodes with extras including answers to your most burning questions, advice on all things dating and relationships, and much more. Check out the link in the episode description for more information. Hi there, this is Jillian on Love, and I am on a mission to teach people how to transform their romantic relationships by transforming the relationship they have with themselves. So whether you are in a relationship, you're single, or heartbroken, I've got you covered. I'm Jillian Turecki, certified relationship coach and teacher with over 20 years experience helping people transform their relationship with themselves through their bodies, breaths, and minds. I have now coached and taught thousands of people to become better versions of themselves and change the way they show up for and within their love lives. In today's episode, I am so excited to welcome the one and only Matthew Hussey onto the show. Matthew Hussey, if you have not heard of him already, is a New York Times bestselling author, speaker, and coach specializing in confidence and relational intelligence. His YouTube channel is number one in the world for love life advice with over half a billion views. He writes a weekly newsletter and is the host of the podcast Love Life with Matthew Hussey. Hussey provides monthly coaching to the members of his private community at lovelifeclub.com. And over the past 15 years, his proven approach has inspired millions through authentic, insightful, and practical advice that not only enables them to find love, but also feel confident and in control of their own happiness. And let me tell you, nothing could be more true. He is incredibly authentic. He's just brilliant. His advice is amazing. And I can't stress enough how much you are going to get out of this episode. And he has just come out with a new book. You must get this book. No, seriously, I'm just about finished with it. Just have a few more pages. I have been incredibly engrossed. I've read it in less than 2 days. So I really cannot recommend it enough. His book, Love Life, How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person, and Live Happily No Matter What, is available now. The link is in the show notes. You know I wouldn't BS you. It's really a run, don't walk. Get the book, and I'm just really excited for you to listen to this episode. So here we go. Matthew Hussey. Matthew Hussey, welcome.
It's so good to be here, Jillian. I've been really, really looking forward to this conversation.
I mean, I've been waiting for this conversation. So I'm really looking forward to it, especially since, you know, we were chatting a little bit before and I'm almost through your book, not completely, but I am totally engrossed, like truly engrossed. Honestly, it's wonderful. It's brilliant. And every single person who's listening to this episode must get it immediately and read all of it. That's literally just it. That's what I have to say. And my listeners know that I don't recommend anything that I'm not 100% behind. So bravo. Thank you for coming on the show.
Those words mean so much to me, Jillian. Me and my wife are both admirers of your work, and you have such an authentic voice in a world that it feels more and more rare to feel that authenticity. And, you know, when you combine that level of authenticity with your insightfulness, it's really powerful. So I don't take those words lightly coming from you.
Well, I appreciate that. I want to just dive in. Actually, as I was reading, there was something that you wrote that not only I know is going to strike a very deep chord with people who are listening, but it struck such a chord in me personally. I will quote something that you wrote. When I tell women what to watch out for, it's often a younger, more reckless version of myself. I'm not saying I wasn't a gentleman, Was I chivalrous? Absolutely. Was I kind? Most of the time, yes. I wanted to treat everyone well. I loathed the idea of ever hurting anybody. Did I care about people's feelings? Deeply. But in the end, I cared about mine more. The main reason why that was such an impactful thing to read is because it's easy to say like, oh yeah, like the stereotypical person, man or woman with really weak character, who's like just trying to get in your pants, who just is like a jokester, like you just know, like this is a dude that's just for fun or not serious or just like I said, just very weak character. But I think more often than not, which causes so much confusion is, no, this person is actually great. They're doing all the things, like for the people who date men, whether, you know, women or men, and like, this is what I want. I want the gentleman. He has manners. He's well-spoken. He's chivalrous. This is what I want. And that is seductive, right? And so you think everything is going well, and you feel like you've met that person who's quote-unquote ready. And then as time progresses, and sometimes it's like literally a few days, and sometimes it's a couple of months, you realize like, is this person a jerk? Are they not a jerk? It's that confusion. And I think that is also so important for people to understand that it's not just the bad person, the bad guy, you know, the bad girl who's going to, you know, be the person who's sort of undateable or who's like not great at being in a relationship. It could actually be the really good person who just doesn't understand themselves yet and doesn't understand love yet and isn't mature enough yet to pursue, create, sustain a relationship.
Everything you said is absolutely spot on. Firstly, what was interesting is, and I was mentioning to you earlier before we started, I released a couple of the pages that you just mentioned to my mailing list, just as an early kind of excerpt from the book. And the feedback I got was really powerful from people who said, you saying that about yourself actually finally gave me the closure I needed to let someone go. And you said the things that they wouldn't say to me. And to be fair, I was also saying the things that, of course, I wasn't saying at the time. And firstly, it highlights one of the problems of looking for closure from the person who's hurting us and from the person who's not meeting our needs, whether it's because they're not showing up in the way that we would like or whether it's because they simply won't commit to us. Expecting closure from that person is an extremely dangerous thing. And it's a really easy way to waste time because they may never give you that kind of closure. They probably won't. And so we have to get to a point where the closure has to be whether I am happy or unhappy, whether I look at my reality and it's what I wish for myself or whether it falls far short of that. That has to be the closure. It can't come in the form of words. We can't expect it in the form of someone else giving us a clean cutoff because people will also rarely do that. They may do it more than they give you verbal closure, but still many people will keep you in their lives in some kind of a way that serves them for years in many cases. In some cases, I've coached people for the last 17 years of my life. In some cases, I'm coaching women who have been in a story with a guy who still isn't showing up, still isn't committing, still is not sure what they want for decades. And it's become the story of their life and their love life well into their 50s and 60s. And we're talking about a guy they met in college. You know,
it's frightening, actually.
It's truly frightening. And it highlights, firstly, like I said, the fact that we cannot wait for someone else for closure or a clean break. We have to declare time of death on that relationship before they will ever do it. And we also have to start to understand that what we continue in our minds as a love story depends wholly on what we're choosing to value.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How are you feeling? Are you drained? Are you bursting with energy? Like, what's your social battery right now? Is it you don't have enough boundaries? Is it that you could really use a lot more social interaction, but you're feeling like you don't get enough? Because it can be really easy to ignore that battery inside of us and spread ourselves thin or not fill it up enough, especially with winter being over and spring starting and certain gatherings starting again. Therapy can help us, can help you build the self-awareness to understand the kind of social life that really fills you up but doesn't drain your battery. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. First of all, it's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge, which, by the way, that's a really big deal because sometimes it takes a couple of tries with a couple of different therapists to find the right one because it is a relationship after all. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/onlove today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onlove.
There's a chapter in this book called How to Tell Love Stories where I break down the four levels of importance in a situation that you have with someone. I won't call it a relationship because many of you can apply this model to situations that never turn into a relationship as a way of knowing whether to value it or not. There are four levels, and I've taught this model for many years now, and it's really helped people to clarify whether the thing that they keep holding on to is worth valuing or not. The first level is admiration. And admiration is simply, is there someone you find appealing, attractive, interesting? Is there someone you're right now thinking is sexy, charismatic, or just eligible in some way? That's just admiration. It doesn't mean anything and it's not very important because you don't even know if you feel anything back from that person. That person may not even know you exist. So yes, that's how important that is. Many, many stories of unrequited love are told about the admiration stage. Unrequited love itself is a very damaging story that's told. It makes for great poetry. It makes for great novels. It makes for great songs, but it doesn't make for a great life.
No.
So second level is mutual attraction. And mutual attraction is, I don't just have a, you know, I don't just feel they're attractive. We actually have a connection or a chemistry together. So that usually comes in the form of someone giving us some attention. And we're so elated because the older we get, it can feel harder and harder to meet someone that we're attracted to. And then when someone we're attracted to shows interest back, it feels like the Holy Grail. It feels like, oh my God, this is it. I found it.
Totally.
And because of that feeling, it feels like we'll do anything for this, no matter how this person treats us, no matter how inconsistent they are, no matter what words are coming out of their mouth about how they're not ready or they don't really want a relationship. We just think it's the most important thing in the world that I've found this feeling and I have to hold on to it at any cost. And what at any cost means is usually at the cost of my standards, at the cost of the expectations I once had for the kind of love or relationship I wanted to be a part of. So that level two, mutual attraction, is the most dangerous phase in many ways. The third level is commitment. And that's where two people are actually saying yes to each other. It's a really kind of undervalued thing right now, I feel like, is that we value so much the connection and the chemistry we feel with someone, but not so much the fact that they're not even saying yes to a relationship. So commitment is level three. Are we both saying yes? And then the fourth level, one could be forgiven for thinking that's where you stop, that's enough. But it's not, because love is not all you need. In life, perhaps, but not in love, ironically. When it comes to romantic love, you need more than commitment. You need compatibility. Do you work together? And that's level four, compatibility. Do we actually work together? You know, if you have a very fluid relationship with the truth and I really value honesty, then there's a fundamental area of incompatibility. If your moral compass is completely different from mine, we're going to have issues with compatibility. If we have completely different ideas about what a life well lived is, we're going to run into some issues of compatibility. If we have incompatible visions of the future, you want children and I don't, that's a fundamental area of incompatibility. Now, can many areas of incompatibility be worked through? Yes. But in order to work through areas of incompatibility, you need a true teammate. You need someone with a generosity of spirit. You need someone with a deep level of empathy, someone who is a great problem solver with you. And you both need to have those things. So again, if one of you has those things and the other one doesn't, then you also have a level of incompatibility because you won't be able to work through the incompatibilities you do have together. So those are the four stages: admiration, mutual attraction, commitment, and compatibility, or the four levels, I should say, as opposed to four stages, because they're not necessarily, you know, chronological in that sense. So now, just to go back to what you were saying, if you encounter someone who you feel this incredible chemistry with, or this incredible connection with, and I love that you made this point that it's very easy with someone who's just obviously not a great person to go, I know what I'm doing here. I'm getting into business with someone who's just not that great, and I know what I'm dealing with. With the person who has great qualities and looks like they have great fundamentals, it's even more dangerous because it really looks like the thing we're looking for. But when you look at these four levels of importance and you say, oh, I'm at level two, all I have here is mutual attraction, a connection, a chemistry. I actually don't have any more than that. I certainly don't have commitment because they're not saying yes. And someone might argue, no, but we're so compatible. And I would argue that the most fundamental level of incompatibility is I want you and you don't want me.
100%.
I don't know how we can get more incompatible than that. And certainly if you wanted to boil it down to a future incompatibility, it's that you want a relationship right now in your life and this person doesn't. So those are the things we tend to ignore when we're telling ourselves a story about someone being our person, someone being the one for us. We ignore these fundamental problems we have at these different levels of importance that should, if we look at that model and we really apply it to our situation, it should, and I mean this in the healthiest sense, enable us to really downgrade and devalue the importance of this situation that we have in front of us. And, you know, the ultimate way to kind of devalue something is to look at it honestly and say, it's not making me happy. The fact that I talk about it all the time is not a reflection of how happy I am. It is a reflection of how unhappy I am. And why am I not listening to that? I've made it more important to get this person than to be happy. That's something that I know myself in my life. I've been pretty poor in my life at paying attention to my feelings. And the times when I've been the most unhappy are often the times where I'm paying the least attention to my feelings and doing whatever I can to escape them.
This episode is sponsored by MasterClass. MasterClass has completely changed the game for me when it comes to cooking, because I've never been into cooking and I really wanted to get into cooking. And MasterClass is the only thing that's been able to really change my level of confidence and give me the skill that I needed to fulfill this desire, which was to cook more. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of amazing people on this podcast, but if you're like me, you want to go deeper. So where can you learn from the most remarkable people? Honestly, that's MasterClass. MasterClass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master negotiation with Chris Voss, who's incredible, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or learn how to cook and make literally the best eggs that you've ever had in your life, like me, Masterclass has you covered. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's really no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/JOL. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/JOL. Masterclass.com/JOL. My brain is firing, and there's like so many places where I can go with this. Two things that I think would be really useful to cover. One is talking about helping navigate the transition from the stage where you have the mutual attraction to commitment. Because I think that's a transition that a lot of people struggle with because, well, for one, I know that women really struggle with that transition because usually what happens with her partner is that, especially if she's someone who, regardless of who she dates, she's someone who is more comfortable with being pursued, right? So she partners with those who are pursuing her. And one thing that I've experienced myself, and I know countless women have experienced, is when it transitions from the lusty chemistry intensity of it all, where you're like two horny teenagers who found each other, you know, life is boring, life has no purpose, and yet we have this connection, which is part of what makes it so addictive, I think, is if your life doesn't feel full going into it. That transition from the chemistry to the more committed stage is usually when things relax a little bit. There isn't this intense charge behind it. There isn't that immature enthusiasm almost, like, you know, you're pursuing, you're talking every day, and then you're committed, and it's almost like it slows down. And there's an appropriateness to it slowing down. People really fear the slowing down. They fear when the comfort sets in and they think, oh my God, have they lost interest? They're not pursuing me as much. You know, we're not having sex multiple times a day anymore. You know, it's like, it's more comfortable. There's more ease. I personally love that stage. But I will admit that the transition to that stage can really bring up a lot of anxiety for people. One, because there are certain people who think, well, if it's not intense all the time, then it's not love, right? But then there are also people who think, well, is it not love because they don't love me anymore? They're not into me anymore. And that's when I have found that people break up the most, is because they cannot make that transition from the intensity to the more level-headed, if you will, stage of commitment. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on that.
That's such a wonderful way of phrasing it. You're the first person in the interviews I've done that's phrased it as such, and it's so appropriate. I think what can help us a little bit is by looking at the way that transition actually is modeled in all different parts of life, because it almost takes love out of this special realm where we think, like, if we lose that feeling or if it goes into that more nuanced, subtle phase, that we're doing something wrong or that something must be wrong with this person, because we actually, we see this playing out in all different ways in our life. If you take, some would argue, and people hit these phases at all different stages of life, of course, but some would argue that for many, there is this natural transition between one's 20s and one's 30s, between that kind of high chasing, you know, looking for those quick gratification type buzzes, to those things don't seem to be working as well as they used to, whether that's alcohol, whether it's food, whether it's drugs, whether it's part, whatever it is. It's like people go through things in their 20s that feel great in their 20s and they're not so great later on. And they get to a point where they're like, it's almost like, how many people do we know who hit a certain stage of life and they catch themselves saying something that's enjoyable today and going, oh my God, did I really just say that?
Like going to bed at 9?
I was just about to say to you, a friend of mine is in town right now for my book launch, and it was like 8:30, and she was like, I'm so excited to go to bed and then wake up early and then go to the gym. And then she caught herself and she was like, I can't believe who I've become. Like, what is this? But what happens, and what we're almost ashamed to admit, is that this new thing, it's really lovely. And it, in many ways, it feels better. It doesn't give us the same highs that we may have gotten at a different time in our life. But in a way, getting the high isn't the point. The point is how good I feel and how consistent this good feeling is and how much more nourishing it is. Let's take it out of the realm of what happens to people at a certain age. Look at business. There are those who I think always struggle to build something of value in the business world because they get excited about new ideas all the time and they love the thrill of the new idea. They love the thrill of talking about it, of this new thing. Oh, I've got this really cool new idea for, and there's a certain validation that you get from that. And everyone goes, oh, that does sound really cool. And you haven't really done it yet, but it feels good to have talked about it and it feels good to get the validation for it. And then of course you get into the idea and you realize the idea isn't perfect and it has flaws and there are some great things about the idea, but in order to make the idea work, you have to actually commit to the idea, and committing to the idea it can be a much more monotonous process of waking up every day and grinding at that idea and doing it over again. And it stops being as sexy when you're in it. That's just a truth of life. Everyone who thinks you have a cool job is not doing that job 365 days a year.
Exactly.
They look at it from the outside and they're like, what a cool job. And people fantasize about having someone else's job. And a lot of that is because they're not doing that job. So
totally.
I feel like that sometimes when people see me on stage at my retreat and they're like, oh my God, you get to do this. You get to like experience helping people make those changes and going away to these nice parts of the world and help. And it's like, that's 1 week of my whole year. That's not my life. That's literally 1 week of my year is spent doing that. The rest of the year is spent at home behind a laptop. Like it's, that's not my life, but it's really easy to compare it to that highlight. We do that, of course, in relationships. We look at the picture of two people on a vacation together and we think our relationship is dull. I say that just to widen that lens and to say to people, there is a slowdown, there is a different kind of energy. But I think at a certain point in our lives, some of us make the transition naturally because we just realize what's not working anymore and what's never going to work for the future for us. Other people have to really do a very conscious resetting of their values. But at a certain point, I think we have to say to ourselves, what's the energy that's going to be important to me going forward? Is it this constant frenetic, chasing, gnawing, fraught, like frisson of chemistry and flirtatiousness so that never ends? And by the way, in order for that to never end, you have to construct artificial scenarios. That's how that doesn't end, is if you either keep going from one person to the next, then yeah, you're right, it'll never end. But you'll also never build anything. And you'll never have the calm feelings that are the opposite of that anxiety that deep down you are seeking, that are really important to you, but you're addicted to this other energy. Or you can manufacture it by creating scenarios that create that feeling. You know, why is it an affair is so apt for producing all of that? It's the feeling of the forbidden fruit. It's the feeling that I have to steal moments for it. There's a whole story element to that. Why is the vacation romance so exciting? Because you have to go home. Fireworks are fireworks because they end. Fireworks wouldn't be something we got excited about in the way that we do. Even like literal fireworks. When we look up on New Year's and we see the fireworks, they're magical. But in order for them to be magical, they have to finish. if fireworks just carried on for 4 hours, we would all be looking at our watches going, when is this going to end? I've had enough. But they're magical because they last about 10 minutes. So we have to start looking at love the same way. What feeling am I going for? And of course, you've mentioned the word addiction. The hard part is that these feelings are highly addictive. They are highly dopaminergic. They are the stuff that we can wire ourselves to want and need to the extent that it's hard to appreciate anything else. If you take a drug addict, the day they go cold turkey and they stop using, you ask them to appreciate a sunset, it's probably the wrong day for them to truly appreciate the magnificence, the awe of this wonder. But it is a wonder. It's just that our body is going to have to come down from all of these feelings over here and spend some time in a calmer state for us to truly appreciate that different energy that is stunningly beautiful and extremely rewarding, but it ain't drugs in the same way that drugs are drugs. So I think it's learning to value a different thing altogether as opposed to looking for the elements of that high in this new phase, which isn't actually about that. And it's almost like we're missing the point if we're looking for it to constantly be about that.
That's so brilliantly put. Thank you for that, really. This episode is sponsored by Indeed. If you need to hire, you actually need Indeed. So if this applies to you, you have to understand that Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And that's a really big deal. And if you are someone who needs to hire, like the hiring process can be incredibly challenging. And what I really love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because, you know, when I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. And with Indeed, it's just fast. It's all there and very helpful. It leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So what that means is the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/JOL. Just go to Indeed.com/JOL right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/JOL. Terms and conditions apply. You need to hire, then you need Indeed. It's such a practice of presence to be in a relationship because when you're constantly chasing that high, as one would when it comes to drugs, you're running away really from the present moment. You know, you can't appreciate the sunset if you're not in the here and now. And I also think that for people who are listening who feel very caught up in that dopamine cycle, it's always an invitation to look within. I think that boredom and lack of purpose plays a huge role in sort of pursuing these types of relationships, not knowing how to meet our own needs for adventure, for fulfillment, for growth. And I think that it takes a tremendous amount of maturity, and it's really important to ask oneself if they're about to like pick up the phone and dial this person up, even if they're not even at that point yet where they're about to call the person, but all of a sudden they're laying in bed and they're kind of fantasizing about this person. They're thinking about this person. It's like, why am I obsessing about this person all of a sudden? And they think it must be them. No, it's your boredom. And it takes a tremendous amount of self-awareness to just say, like, am I just bored right now? Am I feeling, have I lost presence in my life? Am I constantly in the past or constantly in the future that I can't actually find the beauty of what's right now? So therefore, I'm fantasizing. And fantasy is a part of life. Fantasies are free. But when we get caught in the fantasy is when we get into a lot of trouble. You know, one of the things that you do so well, Matthew, and have been such a tremendous help is helping, I know for you specifically, women sort of decode men's behavior. And I will say that I think for people of all sexual orientations, whoever they date, many people can relate to this. I'm going to ask you like a very practical question, which is, I mean, I'm going to speak in heteronormative terms just because I date men. I know you're married to a woman, but I think that this can apply to many people. Woman, when we're dating a guy and everything is going really well, then we finally, it goes up another level and we finally have sex. And then you start to feel him pull away. How does a woman or anyone in that position where they feel like, oh, we just reached a new level of closeness and now they're pulling away, how do they approach that with the person? Because what I would have done in the past, this is an older self, act like I don't care. I'm like, you know, sitting at home, totally anxious, play it cool, lean back, wait for him to come to me. And that is just like, it's a double-edged sword because it depends where you are dating the person. Because on the one hand, you don't want him to be so important. But on the other hand, you just had sex with him. So you know what? He is important. And you have to just admit that.
So much to say about this. It's like, this is one of those scenarios where many things can be true at the same time. It can mean something to us. It can mean absolutely nothing to the other person. And understanding that is really important. It means we don't have to deny what's true to us or how we feel about sex and pretend that it meant nothing to us. But what we mustn't ever do is stray into thinking that someone else thinks or behaves in the way that we do or values the same things that we do, because it is simply not true that you are closer now because you had sex. That is in no way a given. It can be true between many people, but for many people, that will be a very asymmetric relationship with intimacy. And what that says, if you even rewind it prior to sex, what it says is, I need to know and be highly self-aware about what sex means to me. And I need to filter everything that I do through that lens of whether this is a good idea for me or not a good idea for me. I'm not interested so much in kind of ideas around when someone should have sex with another person, because it's for anyone to decide. I've never, ever come in my life from some kind of, you know, puritanical place of people shouldn't have sex or they should wait or whatever. I don't care. I only care that you're safe. Just keep yourself safe. But what we should be honest with ourselves about is, why am I about to have sex with this person? Am I having sex with them because I think by doing so, it's going to bring us closer together? If that's the case, I need to tread very carefully, and because that is a major assumption that may not be true. Am I having sex with them because it just feels fun and exciting and I feel safe? Then awesome. But also just ask yourself, and we have to do this with everything in life, is this one of those things that I do and afterwards I say, I'm so happy I did that? Or is it one of those things I do and afterwards I say, why did I do that? That's an important question to ask for anything. It's an important question to ask for, you know, eating pizza three nights a week. It's like, is this one of these things that afterwards I say, I'm so glad I did that? And sex for a lot of people is one of those things that doesn't make them say afterwards, I'm so glad I did that. They carry a lot of shame afterwards. They guilt themselves. They suddenly feel filled with anxiety over whether that person is going to text them now or call them now. And if they don't, I feel like, you know, I'm going to crumble. It's going to destroy me emotionally if now that I've done this person. I only say all of that because it can lead to a greater sense of intentionality before we do it, where we check in with ourselves and with the person to say, is this person in any way in the same place I am? Are they thinking of this the same way I am? Are they open to something more? Or is this just a bit of fun? If I'm going to get my heart broken afterwards, if it turns out this person wasn't being intentional here, then I should have that conversation with the person beforehand. Now, let's just fast forward to, you didn't think of any of that. And now you've had sex and now you're in the place of anxiety and, you know, they're not calling or they're not texting or you feel strange afterwards because it feels like nothing's changed in the positive sense after. All of that is fine. Everyone's been there. But what you do now is either going to be really authentic to who you are and what your experience is and what you value, or you are going to be mirroring someone else's values in a way that actually takes you further from who you are and, frankly, has the double negative effect of not showing them what you actually want. Mitch Albom said, he said, if you don't like the culture, and he was talking about life in general, but if you don't like the culture, don't buy it. Create your own. And many people in their love lives right now, they want to find love deeply, but they hate the dating culture that's out there. And part of the dating culture is hookup culture and people having sex and then moving on at lightning speed and doing it with five people at the same time. And meanwhile, you might be here being like, this is the opposite of everything I want, but this is the culture I find myself in. And the problem is that when an internal culture, our internal culture of fear and anxiety around the possibility of never finding what we want, of possibly ending up alone, of never having the family that I desire for people who desire that, or running out of time to do that, when that internal culture of fear meets an external culture of people taking what they can get while offering the minimum possible investment, that creates a recipe for low standards and for letting go of expectations and for accepting far less than we deserve. And so we have to be mindful of all of that and say, what's the culture I want to create? Much like a business would start with not what's the culture of every other business. What's the culture I want for my brand, for my business? We can do the same in our love lives and say, what's the culture that I want for my love life? What's important to me? If sex means something to me, then it's important that I don't mirror everybody else. We have to step out. This is something that in general will be really valuable for people. So I'm really excited for everyone listening. We have to start modeling instead of mirroring. We have to stop mirroring the culture we see and start modeling the culture we want to have for our own love life. Let me take it out of the sex example. If someone has not texted you for 2 weeks and you really like that person and it was going really well before that and there was progress and now you feel like, wow, this really sucks and it hurt my feelings that someone just disappeared for 2 weeks. And then on the day 14 on a Saturday evening, they say, what are you up to tonight? And before you were talking every day and now you haven't heard from them for 2 weeks, but all of a sudden out of nowhere, they say, what are you up to? It's very tempting. And this goes back to your example of feigning indifference after sex, because that's what you see from them. It's very tempting to just be so elated that this person that you like is texting you all of a sudden, and so worried about being vulnerable and showing how that's actually made you feel over the last 2 weeks, that you mirror their behavior. So when they say, what are you up to? You don't speak any of what's true to you. You just say, oh, yeah, I'm just hanging out with friends tonight, you know, having a great day, sun's out. What are you up to? Now, nothing, precisely nothing that you want to communicate has been communicated. Something has been communicated, mind you. What's been communicated is that you are totally okay with the dynamic that has just taken place, that there is nothing wrong with that as far as you're concerned. And what we do with our indifference is we tacitly approve the exact opposite of the behavior we would like to see from someone. So What's the alternative? The alternative is to be real about how this is different from the culture that we want to have for our life, or for our love life in this case. I have to tell you this story, Jillian, because it's so on point for what we're talking about. There was a time when I was dating my wife, Audrey, where I went off the radar for a little bit. And we weren't in a committed relationship at that point. But as far as she was concerned, she was evaluating me for that role in her life. And we were long distance. We'd met in London. I went back to Los Angeles. And I started to fade. You know, my texts and my calls were less and less frequent. And at that point, I just couldn't see myself in this long distance, like a committed long distance relationship. And so gradually my communication became more and more sparse. And then I did the complete eye roll move. When I look back now, I cringe. But after a couple of weeks of very little communication, after previous weeks of a lot of communication, I sent a text that said, "I miss you." She sent me a text message back that said everything about her culture and how the culture of what I was doing did not fit with that culture. She said, this is the exact text she sent me. She said, "Hey, I hope you're well. I don't really know what to say when you send a message like this. We haven't really felt that close for a while now. And rightly or wrongly, this message comes across as a bid for attention."
I read that in your book. And please continue. I'll share my thoughts after, because love that.
I could write an entire essay breaking down why that's such an amazing message. Give you the highlights. You know, firstly, she was warm. She didn't become a version of herself that wasn't all of the things that I loved about her. You know, she was like, I hope you're well. Immediate warmth. Then she said, "I don't really know what to say when you send a message like this." Can't get more honest than that. That's just, I don't know what to say. This is like a very out of the blue thing for you to say. And then she said, "We haven't felt that close for a while now," meaning there is a complete disconnect between you saying, "I miss you," and the way that you have been showing up for these last few weeks. I am not going to ignore that disconnect. I'm going to point out that disconnect. I'm going to point to it so that you know that this is weird for me. Even if it's not weird for you, it's weird for me, this incongruence between your behavior and what you're saying. But she wasn't combative about it. She just said, "We haven't felt that close for a while now." Truth. Then she said, and rightly or wrongly is a beautiful phrase, by the way. It removes ego from the equation. It says, "I'm not attacking you. And by the way, I might be wrong. Rightly or wrongly," this is just how I read the situation, "rightly or wrongly, this message comes across as a bid for attention." Now, she says the most cutting thing there, right? That's a very like, oof moment for me to hear that. She has said it in a way where, rather than saying, "I'm pointing to your character and who you are," she's simply pointing out that this is the way this text is coming across to me. And in that message, I have nowhere to hide. It just, it's her truth. It's what it looks like. And it's stating very clearly that this isn't enough for me. This, you sending me a message out of nowhere saying, "I miss you," is not going to suddenly mean I'm going to go into a slew of, you know, romantic words towards you. This is not where I'm at as a result of your behavior. That is showing your culture. That is modeling instead of mirroring. Mirroring would have been, "I miss you too. How are you? What's going on?" Like, that would have been mirroring. Modeling was her saying, "This is my culture. What you're doing right now doesn't fit with that culture."
Okay, so when I read that, I was like, okay, so Matthew Hussey's wife is my hero. But, you know, I'm so glad you included in the book for many reasons, one of which is just, I think it's just a wonderful thing that we marry and or commit to the person who can be a teacher to us in some way, you know? And I would imagine that was, on a personal level, very cutting for you, but on a professional level, a very important teaching moment.
This episode is brought to you by Cozy Earth. Really amazing sheets, towels, and
just, I can't say enough good things about them. A recent survey found that 7 in 10 parents, for example, get an average of 3 hours of sleep a night in their baby's first year. I am not a mother, but I have friends who are mothers, and I know many of you are mothers, and I know many of you are just parents, and you deserve to have quality sleep. I really believe that the quality of our sleep is dependent on a few things, but one of the things it's dependent on is how cozy our sheets are. Cozy Earth bedding products are crafted with temperature regulating technology, adapting to your body's needs through all phases of the night. They use only the best fabrics, materials, and weaves, offering superior softness, truly, that invites you to sink into a world of comfort. It also stands by the quality and longevity of its products. This is actually very important. Enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all purchases. So that's amazing. So they really are built to last through the hardest days and the longest nights of motherhood or whatever, just life. When you check out, use code JOL for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Use code JOL, 35% off at CozyEarth.com.
Something that I wanted to add, the modeling instead of mirroring is brilliant. I will use that and always give you credit. Always, of course. It's so on point. And it's so incredibly antithetical to a lot of the messaging out there. Certainly not my messaging, but a lot of the messaging out there that tells women, you know, mirror their energy, match their energy. And it just drives women and people into deeper dysfunction, into relational dysfunction. And what I want to encourage people, and I'd love to hear your final thoughts on this, is that for someone to have said or have written in a text what your wife did or your soon-to-be wife did back then takes a tremendous amount of inner certainty, security, and confidence. But I really want to drive the message home that even if you're someone who is, let's say, anxiously attached, you're anxiously attached and or you have ingrained inside of your system so deeply this idea that like you need to get the person, you need to strategize to get the person, you know, you're in the scarcity mindset, or, you know, there's a lot of messaging for women for centuries that if we work harder, we will get what we want. When actually, the more we actually try to get someone to choose us, the higher the chances are that they won't. And that's really an interesting paradox, and it's antithetical to what the messaging we've received. But even if you have that inside of you, all it takes is courage. And by reading your book and getting very committed to your intentions, your values, the rewiring, and just trusting that when you can approach it from that place, calm, because what that read to me was she was grounded. She was calm. Mm. She was not reactive. Like you said, she didn't divorce herself from who she is as a person. And she didn't get all uppity about it, which of course makes it land even, it cuts even deeper for you, right? Because then if she were, then you can be like, oh, whatever, she's the immature one. And then your ego can just reinforce the story that actually right. You're the right one and there's something wrong with them.
That very well said.
So she made it so that there was no room for that. Mm. But it's never too late to just do that. Even if your heart is beating out of your chest as you do it, even if you're so scared that you're going to lose that person, you got to just do it. Because if it doesn't work out after you are committed to your culture and you are committed to being a modeler, not a mirror, then you can be 100% certain and validated that person is not for you. Period. End of story.
100%. And if anyone needs a kind of shortcut to the kind of certainty that is required to go and have a standard like that and truly execute that standard, you don't even have to reach confidence yet. for anyone who does pick up a copy of this book, when you get to the final third of the book, there is an entire kind of masterclass on how to be the most confident you've ever been so that you can practice those standards in a very grounded and kind of effortless way. However, if you want an immediate short-term hack for this, you only need to look to the pain that ignoring your standards has caused you in the past to develop the kind of certainty necessary to stick to those standards in the future. Plato said, our need will be our real creator. Well, in the past, think of a relationship where you were utterly miserable. Think of a person who made you suffer constantly because you at some point decided to give up on a standard with that person, and then your existence with that person was always one of suffering as a result. And connect, never forget how unhappy you were. Never let the passing of time disconnect you merely to your loneliness or your desire to find love and disconnect you from how painful it was the last time around when you didn't have a certain standard or when you allowed a certain culture to occur. There's a chapter in the book called Do Not Join a Cult of Two. That's very much about what happens when we completely buy into someone else's culture and ignore our own. We join a cult of two in a relationship or a situationship. Remember, connect to how painful that was. You don't need confidence in that moment to have a standard. You only need to know. In fact, if you look up confidence in the dictionary, one of the definitions is a feeling of certainty about something. Well, you can have it by that definition. You can be confident without feeling worthy. You can simply feel confident, i.e. certain, that I can never indulge that again. I will be miserable if I ever indulge that again. If I held someone's hand over a flame, they wouldn't need confidence to take it out. They would simply need to feel the pain, and removing their hand is instinctive. It can be that way in your dating life right now too. You can have an instinctive response that if you connect to your past pain, says, I can never tolerate that. I can never allow that again. And then in the meantime, you can work on your confidence. And for anyone who does get a copy of the book, we can do that together.
Very well said. Thank you so much for being such an incredible help and guide to thousands, if not millions of people throughout your career, starting at a very young age. And so clearly it's your calling. And thank you for writing this book. This book is going to be like a very important teacher and friend to so many people. So I just appreciate you so much. I really do, and have for a very long time. So I'm just very grateful to have you here. And if there's anything else that you feel like you need, I want to be respectful of your time, but if there's anything that you just want to say before we wrap up to the audience, go for it.
Well, thank you. Those words are absolutely lovely, and they mean so much. It's an honor to have this conversation with you. I have so much respect for the work you're doing and your approach. And I feel like you and I are just getting to know each other now, but it feels like we speak the same language. And that's a lovely, lovely feeling to meet someone that I feel that about. And I'm sure I would have so much in common with the people that follow your work, because I know they follow you because they resonate with your language. For anyone out there who has enjoyed this conversation, the book is more of that. It's called Love Life: How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person, and Live Happily No Matter What. And I've poured my heart and soul into this over the last 4.5 years. I'm much more vulnerable than I've ever been in the past in this book. And I've designed it to be a co-pilot for anybody who is looking for love, but also anybody who wants to experience more happiness and more confidence along the way. If you go to lovelifebook.com, you'll be able to buy the book from all sorts of, you know, different retailers, whether you're domestic to the US or you're international. There are different links for both. But the cool thing about that particular website is that A, we're doing a bunch of giveaways right now for people who buy the book, which are really fun. You'll see them on the page. There's some really exciting stuff there that you'll be enrolled in. But also, I'm doing an event on May the 4th that's exclusive to all of the book buyers called Find Your Person. And we're basically going to bring the book to life in this live event. It's virtual, so people can do it from anywhere in the world. And we're going to set you up for a year of success in your love life with me coaching you live at that event. So if you go to lovelifebook.com, you can not just get the book, but you can use your receipt to get the giveaways or to be part of the giveaways, and also to get your free ticket to that event on May the 4th. And that website is lovelifebook.com. Thank you for having me, Jillian.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful. And everything will be captured on the show notes too. Thank you, Matthew. I really appreciate you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Matthew Hussey as much as I enjoyed having it with him. And I would love to hear your thoughts and your insights and your questions about this episode or any other episode. Please do not hesitate to reach out to me and my team at hello@jillianonlove.com. Please get his book. It's just wonderful. I know that it'll be incredibly impactful for you. And lastly, if you think that there's anyone who could benefit even just a little bit from this episode, will you share it with them? Because you just never know whose life you could be changing just by pressing the share button. As always, I thank you for being a listener, and until next time. Jillian on Love is a Q-Code production. Executive produced by David Henning and Steve Wilson. Produced by Shin Yin Hu. Editing and music by Will Tendy.
Are you ready for the ultimate Love Island experience? Join us on After the Island.
We're going back to where it all began, Fiji. Love Island USA Season 5 is making a splash on Peacock right now.
And guess what? Your favorite recap show is back too. Welcome to After the Island.
Join us as real life besties and co-hosts, Elizabeth
and Alex,
as we deep dive into each sizzling episode of Love Island USA.
We'll spill the tea, interview contestants, answer fan questions, and give you unprecedented behind-the-scenes access to the wildly popular world of Love Island.
Don't miss a single moment of the drama, romance, and unforgettable island vibes. Listen to After the Island on any streaming platform.
I'm Carlos King, one of the most sought-after executive producers in reality television. I am thrilled to announce Reality with the King, where we'll discuss all things reality TV. I have interviewed everyone from NeNe Leakes, Teresa Giudice, and Kenya Moore. Each episode, we will rehash shocking betrayals, honey. Yes! Hilarious shade! And all the drama. Reality with the King podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts.